Sunday, March 11th, marked the 7th anniversary of the Japanese earthquake and tsunami. 7 years for a group of U.S. sailors to get sick, and some to die, as a result of their exposure to radiation coming from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, devastated by the tsunami. They were part of a rescue mission to that plant in the days following the disaster. Journalist Greg Levine has written an investigative piece for The Nation magazine titled 7 Years On, Sailors Exposed to Fukushima Radiation Seek Their Day in Court. I called him up to ask him what happened.
So it's been 7 years since a lot of sailors in the Seventh Fleet got, depending on where they were, either an early morning or a late night notice to bring their ships to the northeast coast of Japan. And there they engage in what was called Operation Tamagotchi, Tamagotchi meaning friend or friends in Japanese, where they did a relief and assistance mission to help the victims of the earthquake and the tsunami. But what they did not expect to encounter was the radioactive fallout from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, where over the course of the first few days after the earthquake and tsunami, three reactor containments ruptured, which filled the air around the area and littered the soil and eventually polluted the water with all kinds of radioactive fallout. As these sailors tell it, they had different experiences but all realized something was happening, realized there was exposure but kept working through their mission. And depending on which ship and who they were and where they were, many of these sailors are now experiencing the kinds of diseases we often associate with radiation exposure.
So cancer would be one of them, but there have been some pretty bizarre other illnesses that seem to be pretty clearly connected.
So to listen to the sailors talk, and I spoke to many of them, and to listen to the lawyers who are now representing them, it does seem very clearly connected. It remains to be determined in court because, like many things related to health and disease, a direct one-to-one correlation isn't always absolutely provable, but there's a preponderance of evidence. And what you see are different stages depending on the level of exposure and the amount of time that passed. Cancers do eventually emerge. The more severe your exposure, the sooner they possibly emerge. You often see thyroid cancers first because there's a very easy pathway for radioactive iodine, which is a common byproduct of fission, and that gets into the thyroid very easily. So you'll see thyroid cancers, and you'll see more earlier in women and children. But the cells in the body, as the health experts tell me, the cells in the body that replicate fastest tend to show signs of exposure first. So you'll get a lot of stomach problems because we're always shedding the lining of our intestinal tract. I should say intestinal problems. So you'll see a lot of bowel problems very quickly in the early days, and that seems pretty much a universal for everyone I spoke to. That, for instance, the USS Ronald Reagan, which was the aircraft carrier at the center of this group, so many of the sailors and Marines and airmen who are stationed on the ship talk about having to constantly run to the bathroom, and some of them to this day have not had a regular digestive process and are still experiencing the kind of gastric distress that you would associate with severe gastric diseases like diverticulitis and things like that.
And also some of them, I mean, they're all young, in their 20s, some in their early 20s are experiencing severe arthritis, making them feel like they're 60-year-olds.
Right. So, yes, I spoke to people who were from their, you know, from like 19 at the time through their 40s, but they're all young and healthy. And important to note that in order to start their service, they all had physicals and were deemed in good shape. And, yes, you see degenerative bone and joint diseases that are often related to radiation exposure, because of other heavy metals that sort of mimic calcium. Strontium-90, for instance, mimics calcium in the body and can cause very brittle bones or brittle teeth. And degenerative discs is a problem. One Marine I spoke to has leukemia, and he is constantly, or he's in remission now, but he still suffers from all the cramping and the joint problems that came on with the disease. There's a host of diseases, and it's widespread, and based on what I'm told by a lot of the radiation health experts, we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg, because as radiation exposure goes, it's pretty early on, even though it's 7 years now. In the next 20 years, you should see a lot more based on the sort of exposures we feel like from the testimony these sailors got.
So these sailors went out for a rescue mission. Were they issued personal protective equipment? Were they told what they were going into?
It depends on which ship and what time they got there. But on the whole, they were not adequately briefed or protected based on what I understand to have happened at the Fukushima Daiichi plant and what the sailors told me they went through. Of course, memories differ and experiences differ. It's 7 years later, but when, say, the USS Ronald Reagan first encountered what a lot of the sailors describe as a sort of thick, warm cloud, they were not wearing protective gear. They had not been briefed that they were sailing into an area with high amounts of ionizing radiation. They were later wanded, told to shed their clothes. They filled out forms to be issued iodine tablets, but no one I spoke to was actually ever issued these potassium iodide tablets. And what those are is a sort of preventive measure, because like I said before, iodine enters into the thyroid. Radioactive iodine can cause thyroid cancers. And so one of the sort of preemptive things that you do if you think you're going to be exposed to the kinds of fallout that would come from a uranium fission accident is that you fill up your thyroid with readily available, more benign forms of iodine so that the radioactive iodine doesn't tend to hang out there. So there was like an inkling. Clearly, when they first sailed through the cloud, at least after several minutes or hours, I'm not sure exactly how much, they realized something had happened and they got away from the cloud initially. And then there is honestly some dispute about whether they continued to move away or had to move back, because honestly, it's easier to do the mission, which they were there for, if you're closer to shore. They were flying supplies and relief and help back and forth from the coast of Japan, and you can get a lot more missions in if you're close than you can if you're 100 miles offshore. But if you listen to the sailor stories, you get the sense that they were repeatedly exposed and that the ships that were in the area were quite likely contaminated. They were warned, for instance, on the Reagan not to drink the water from the desalination system for a while. Apparently, they eventually went back to it. But we now know that the Fukushima Daiichi plant contaminated the Pacific Ocean around the Sendai coast up there. And so the Reagan took radioactive contaminated water into its systems. And once it's there, it's quite insidious and very hard to get out.
Well, and you say that about 80% of the radiation went out to sea. Is that correct?
Yeah, according to people who've done the analysis on the area, because of the way the winds were blowing that day, about 80% of what blew out of the containment buildings at Fukushima Daiichi in the first 2 weeks blew out to sea, pretty much right where this chunk of the Seventh Fleet was stationed.
And can you give us a sense of the levels of radiation that they may have been exposed to?
I actually can't, and this is one of the disturbing parts of this story. Measuring radiation is something that can be done and should be done, but often is not done with the kind of specificity and exactitude that is necessary to predict future health risks. It's quite possible that the Navy knows more than I do. A lot of people think that. But all we know is that they were exposed to some amount, that some tests were taken, but I don't have access to the results of those tests. But we don't know if they were necessarily even the right tests. I mean, there are all kinds of ways you can look at people's exposure to ionizing radiation, from simply taking an an air sample and seeing what's there. You can see what wound up on people's clothes. You can pull the air filters from the ship or the helicopters and see what they absorbed. You can also wand very specific areas because, as I mentioned in the story in The Nation, there are something called microparticles, which are these hot particles, which are very, very small, 6 to 9 microns large, that if you're only a few feet away, you wouldn't pick up on any scan. But if you're right next to them, or if you ingest them, or if they stay on your skin for any given period of time, could be very, very harmful. And this goes all the way through to blood tests, which we could do to check chromosome damage. But that is, to the best of my knowledge, something that hasn't been done for any of the people who were exposed.
Now, they're filing suit. Some 400 of these sailors have engaged in this suit. Is that correct?
The lawyers tell me that right now there are about 400 in two separate suits that are moving through the courts in the United States, yes.
And what are they accused? First of all, who are they suing, and what are they accusing them of?
So they are suing TEPCO, which is the Tokyo Electric Power Company, which owned and operated the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant in Japan. And they're suing General Electric, who originally designed and built Fukushima Daiichi and had an ongoing maintenance relationship with the plant all the way through the March 2011 quake. They're suing these two companies, most notably, for negligence and for obscuring the truth once the accident actually happened. And the negligence stems from warnings that General Electric and TEPCO had from actually before Fukushima Daiichi was built. All kinds of steps were taken to essentially make it cheaper to build and easier to run, but not necessarily safer. There was a natural seawall in the area that they cut down considerably. If they had built this on top of the original sized cliff, the tsunami probably would not have flooded the basement of the plant as it did. There were questions about the containment itself around these cores, and if the station suffered a loss of power accident, as they did in this case, whether it could contain the pressure that builds up. I don't know how much detail you want to get into about what happens to a light water reactor when there's no power to move water through it. But if they're not cooled and cooled constantly, they become unsafe very quickly. And most importantly, back to the case, is that they're suing in the United States court. And right now, that's been the sticking point for years, which is that they're U.S. sailors who were part of a U.S. mission for U.S. military services on United States ships, but TEPCO and General Electric would both like to see these cases handled in Japan because the way these sorts of cases are handled in Japan is much more favorable to the companies than they would be if they were handled in the United States.
And there are 22 of these General Electric, they're called Mark I boiling water reactors in the U.S.
Absolutely. And except for four of them, they're all over 40 years old, which is past their original design lifespan. They're identical, almost in every way, shape, and form, to the ones that eventually lost containment and melted through in Japan. Some of them much, much closer to large cities than Fukushima was to Tokyo.
For example?
We have the Pilgrim plant in Plymouth, Massachusetts on the Cape, which is a quick drive to Boston. We have a plant in Virginia that's not that far from Washington, D.C. We have plants near Milwaukee. We have plants near Chicago that are all closer.
Wow. Well, Greg Levine, this is a terrific investigation that you did for The Nation magazine. It's called 7 Years On, Sailors Exposed to Fukushima Radiation Seek Their Day in Court. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure.